and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Sunday evening for me. I'm currently overseas for a couple of days. Before I head to Vegas for our Hoop Collective live show, which we'll talk about and remind you about a little later. Joining us from Indianapolis, Indiana, where he has traveled ahead of the Eastern semifinals, Celtics at Pacers, slated for Monday night, is Tim Bonteps.
Hello, Brian. Before we start, we got Dan Stanzik producing today for Jackson. And I'm going to shout out my guy, Ryan Gensler, high school friend of Dan Stanzik, who we've talked about before on the pod, Akron's women's head coach. Last game beat Pitt. Dramatic win. Second win. Big win for Akron women's hoops, beating a Power 5 school. So with Dan on here, I wanted to shout Ryan out because I know he listens. And that was pretty awesome. Very excited for him.
It's amazing that you're friends with a guy in Akron who's coaching at Akron. It's very ironic, I think you would. Some would say.
Can you get any gear?
We have gear. gear's allegedly coming at some point. We'll see when.
I'm sorry.
When it comes, I'll be wearing it.
You haven't been introduced yet. So just sit back there and get ready for your optimism following the Mavericks' extremely strong finish on Saturday night. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, the one, the only, Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and be a fountain of negativity. I'm going to continue pumping sunshine. I will say this. The fact that you're overseas right now concerns me. Actually, it excites me. It excites me because there's going to be some travel involved. And by the time you get to Vegas, there will be some windy sleep updates. And we know how the people love those WSUs. But I'm going to tell you, you're going to get a Ben McMahon sleep update right now. I was up past 4 o'clock in the morning last night because, you know, sometimes you cover a game and you're there at the arena late. I didn't walk out of the arena until like after 1 o'clock. Luca took a sweet time getting to his head right afterwards. So on. So
I don't blame him for that.
Right, exactly. I get home and you know, your blood's pumping, man. You can't go to sleep. That game is a top three regular season thriller that I've ever seen live. Top three. And I'm talking about the Mavericks going on a 30-0 run, which is far. Elias Sports Bureau goes.
First off, I didn't even see the stat. When was the last time there was a 30-0 run in the NBA in any game?
They don't know. The data goes back to, I believe, 97, 98?
Yeah, 96, 97, or 97, 98 is the first, the last like play-by-play thing. So
yeah, not in that span, according to Elias Sports Bureau. And so they go from down 24 to up 6, and Luka, proud new papa, Luka Doncic, baby. No Kyrie, no Tim Hardaway Jr., no Josh Green, you know, on down the line. Dante Exum also had a baby, so he was out. I mean, this 30-0 run was a six-minute masterpiece. Dude had 7 points, 7 assists, just finding guys all over the floor. Derek Lively Jr., or Derek Lively II, rather, is dunking everything. I mean, wow, unbelievable. From down 24 early in the fourth, to up 6, and then this had everything of Luka. It was a 36-point, 15-rebound, 18 assists. Just, spectacular performance. And then there was a whistle that didn't go his way. He admitted it was probably a travel, but his point was, man, you can't call that for the first time all game. That call should, if you're going to blow the whistle, blow it 20 times every game. And he lost his
composure. Listen, a lot of times Luka has a point. A lot of times when Luka is upset, he has a point.
Yes.
That doesn't necessarily mean he should get out of position. I think anybody would say that who wasn't pro Luka.
And he admitted, you know, he was exhausted. The guy played 46 minutes last night. He rested for 2 minutes in the second quarter, and that was it. And he let his frustration get the best of him. He said the play that cost him the game was an inbounds pass where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander stole it, transition layup. Suddenly the Thunder up 4 in the last minute there. That was right after a timeout. Before the timeout, Luka got torched by Jalen Williams, who went in for the go-ahead bucket. Now, Luka's point is, hey, Jalen Williams made pretty much the same exact move I made that they called for a walk. Why didn't they call him? And then the game ends. Luka's got a few choice words for the ref, Mitchell Irvin, you know, another ref. Mav security kind of gets in the way, make sure things don't escalate. But, I mean, this had all the elements of the Luka Doncic show were on display in Dallas last night. They just weren't able to finish that one off. But I was there when Russ broke the triple-double record. right? And that's when he scored the last 13 points to lead a crazy comeback in Denver. He capped it with about a 35-footer at the buzzer to win it, give him 50 points, eliminate the Nuggets from the playoffs, and still get a standing ovation from the Denver crowd. And then the other one that comes to mind as far as just the most memorable, like heart-pumping regular season performances is that 60-point, 21-rebound, 10-assist triple-double by Luka, where he missed the free throw on purpose, flips it in, does the crazy happy dance to send it into overtime, and then finishes it off. By the way, at that game, sitting courtside mid-court was a gentleman named Patrick Dumont, who is now going to be the Mavericks' new governor. I don't know how much the man really cares about basketball, but as he was walking out of the arena that night, he said, it's like this every night, right?
How about Chet Holmgren making a few plays down the stretch in that one for the Thunder? By the way, speaking of interesting games last night, I'm just going to state a few facts, okay? I'm just going to state a few facts. I'm going to say three things. Just that's all. Chicago Bulls saw Zach LaVine miss his second straight game with a foot injury. Chicago Bulls won their second straight game. Chicago Bulls set a new high for assists in their second straight game. That's all. These are just three things I wanted to say.
Are those related at all or just three separate items?
I don't know. I just said it. Okay. That's all. All right. Let's look forward here and talk about the semifinals. We got the first ever in-season tournament semifinals. No games on Sunday, because the NBA had to plan for all teams to potentially travel and who knows who was going to play. So no games on Sunday, unusual. So a heavy load on Friday and Saturday because of it, especially Friday. So, okay, let's start with the game that you're going to be at, Bontemps. The Pacers hosting the Celtics. The Celtics have had several days off to prepare for this game. They're 15-4. Generally been the most impressive team in the league to this point. Got a strong win over the 76ers on Friday. You were at the game. I understand that Embiid and Maxey didn't play in that game, but they
I don't know if I'd call it a strong win. I would say they won.
Well, it was a win over the 76ers, which could have significant value later on. They are now 2-1 against the 76ers this season. Tyrese Halliburton missed Saturday night's Pacers game. The Pacers still won. They put up 140 even without him. I think it was 140. So
score.
Bontemps, I believe he had an upper respiratory infection, but he's also had a sore knee. So Halliburton's availability, I don't know if they were protecting him, getting him ready for a Monday, but obviously Halliburton's availability is probably, I'm not sure if there's an update on whether Porzingis will be available with the calf injury, but Porzingis' availability Halliburton's availability has got to be the number one thing coming into this game.
All right, we're doing this on Sunday afternoon, so we're not exactly sure what the status updates will be for Monday's game. I will just say I will be truly stunned if Tyrese Halliburton is not playing in this game. The first time in his career, he will be playing on TNT in the in-season tournament quarterfinals. Something the Indiana Pacers have made very clear, including the story I wrote when I talked to Tyrese and Rick Carlisle a couple weeks ago, they've taken very, very seriously. So I think if he can walk, he'll be on the court. Now, will he be 100%? Maybe this bone bruise in his knee is an issue. We'll see. The last game he played played a two-game set against the Pacers or against the Heat. In the game he played Thursday, just in case people didn't see, he only had 44 points. On 15 for 28 shooting, went 6 for 16 from three, had 10 assists, 3 steals, and 2 turnovers. So if he's anything like that version of Tyrese Halliburton, the Pacers will have a chance in this game. I do think there's a chance Kristaps Porzingis will play. We will see. I would say that's probably a lot closer to 50-50 based off people I talked to on Friday in Boston at Sixers Celtics game. He's been dealing with his calf injury, missed a little over a week now. Got hurt last Friday against Orlando, but I think there's a chance he'll play. Either way, I think Boston's going to win this game. They are very well suited to play this Pacers team. They've got maybe the two best defensive guards in the league in Derek White and Jrue Holiday that they can throw at Tyrese Halliburton the whole game. And for as fun as the Pacers are, the thing we have talked about them a lot is they are incredible on offense and incredible at giving up points at the other end.
And flammable on both ends.
Yes, flammable on both ends. And I think in a matchup like this, playing probably the most well-rounded team in the league, it's not the best draw for them. I think it would have been a lot better for the Pacers, frankly, if they'd gotten matched up with Milwaukee, if the Bucks had wound up as the wild card, because I do think that's a better matchup for them, given they could just maybe outscore the Bucks in a game. But Boston's a little bit of a tricky matchup. So I'll take the Celtics, but it'll be a fun one.
Little bit of a tricky matchup. The Celtics were held to 155 points when they played the Pacers earlier this year.
Yes.
Now that was
to be fair. That is the second game Tyrese Halliburton did not play this year. The first, second being the game Saturday.
Everybody who watches the NBA is praying that Tyrese Halliburton plays in this game. Nobody wants to see a 51 point margin in an in season tournament quarterfinal. But obviously, the Celtics are the favorites here. Hope Tyrese Halliburton plays. If he does, it could be fun. And in the spirit of heading to Vegas, have we seen an over-under on this game? There's got to be. What is that? Is it like 400?
I will tell you right now. Assuming there's a line.
Hold on. Let me make a serious guess. I'm going to say the over-under in this game is 258 points.
Well, maybe there isn't a line because of the injuries.
I'm not seeing it.
On our site, Celtics 4.5 point favorites. Mm-hmm. I would take Boston. Over under of 238.5.
Ooh, I'm taking over. I'm taking over. Wait, no, I can't take over. I'm not allowed to bet on NBA stuff. But you are.
How can you possibly? This is why I don't understand. I don't bet on sports. I don't bet on really anything. How can you possibly bet without knowing the availability of the players in this game?
Well, you probably should wait for the Halliburton news, but.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, like, just in general, like, availability of star players. Like, I don't want to go down this road.
That's why the NBA takes the injury report stuff so seriously. That's why teams
But they don't take it seriously. Well, they don't take it seriously.
They pretend to, at least. All right. Let's not go down that road. But ESPN,
all right.
Phenomenal place for you to, it's your gambling fix.
Right. Okay. So,
and boost my 401k.
I'll be interested to see the atmosphere in the arena. I did take a look and see how tickets are moving for this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of tickets available at not high prices. Now, I do not pretend to be an expert on secondary market ticket sales, but when you go on there, you can kind of get a feel. I mean, because here's the thing: I have been in that arena, and is it called Bankers Life Fieldhouse?
It's now Gainbridge Fieldhouse.
Gainbridge Fieldhouse.
Yeah,
I've been there for many playoff games, mm-hmm. and that atmosphere in there can get terrific. The design of the arena, it's a basketball only basically venue. There's no other tenant there. So the permanent stands are very close to the court. It's similar to the way the design is in Utah. At the arena that's had seven names, but it started as a Delta Center, is back to the Delta Center. It's similar to that in way the permanent stands are on top of the crowd. It can be a terrific environment for a game. Unfortunately, and part of it's because the Pacers haven't been good for a while, it just hasn't been a hard place to play in a while. So this is as big of a game as the Pacers have had at home in years.
To that point, according to our site, I'm just looking at it now. Pacers have the lowest average attendance in the league. Part of that's because they have a smaller arena footprint, but 28th in percentage of seats filled, ahead of only Charlotte and Washington.
Well, and it's an interesting market because, like, Indiana is obviously known as a basketball state, but let's be honest, it's a high school and college basketball state. I think you can make a case that the NBA is third in terms of the basketball fandom ladder in Indiana. And, part of that is, like you said, because let's be honest, they've been bad and boring for a little bit. They ain't bad and boring anymore. I mean, they sure as hell ain't boring. This is one of the most exciting teams in the league to watch at this point.
Not that I think that the Celtics couldn't handle an NBA environment, even if it was playoff level. It would just, the way things played out here, the Pacers get a huge advantage by having this game at home. They get the Celtics at home. They get an in-season tournament game at home I mean, I don't know what the odds on that would have been at the start of the season. Pretty high. So obviously, Halliburton's availability is way more important. Obviously, how the Pacers shoot the ball is very important. They need Buddy Hield, for example, to have a good shooting game. They need, you know, they need to have their offense humming. You know, they need to get that score up there. Yeah, the Celtics can score with anybody, but the Pacers are better off. Every point that's scored increases the chances of Pacers to win. So, you know, I'll be interested to see what that environment is like in Indiana for that one.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And look, the Pacers, you mentioned who would have put odds on the Pacers going 4-0 and having a home court game. But like, you know, like we've talked about before, Indiana to me really is sort of emblematic of what the upside of this tournament can be with having a young team on the rise with a bright young star. They now get a chance to have a marquee, you know, national TV game with two games on the schedule. And the other game is, you know, with Sacramento and New Orleans playing with Zion Williamson and De'Aaron Fox and, you know, Brandon Ingram and Domantas Sabonis. Like, that's a similar kind of game where you get a couple young teams trying to push into the top half of the conference, Sacramento trying to prove that they deserve to be there after doing so last year. I think it's the way the field played out, I think it's a fun mix of big markets and big stars and some of these younger upside teams that are going to get a chance to, you know, make a little run here and make some noise this week.
Pacers offensive ratings up to 123.8. That leads the league by 4 full points. The Kings had the best in NBA history last year at 118.6. So just to put it into perspective what the Pacers are doing now, defensive rating, they ain't DFL. They're second to DFL in NBA history. 120.8, saved only by the Charlotte Hornets, who somehow are 121.4.
Yeah, I mean, the gap between the Pacers and Sixers, who are in second, is the same as the gap between the Sixers and the 11th place Miami Heat. It's pretty remarkable.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Okay, in the second game out in Sacramento, the Pelicans travel out there to play the Kings. The Kings coming off a very strong performance Saturday night, beating Denver at home. Denver was strong in this game.
Joker was strong.
Played, right? Well, Joker was strong. Aaron Gordon came back from his injury and I think put up 17 points. De'Aaron Fox, who's been red hot, was hot again, had a great performance, and they beat the Nuggets in a strong win. So they're coming off,
Murray did not play. It was a back-to-back for the Nuggets.
And okay. I forgot to check on that. But still, it was still a very good win. Jokic had a triple-double, I think his eighth of the season.
No, Jokic had 36, 13, and 14. A triple-double does not.
Let me hop in here, by the way. So Brian gave a nice speech the other day reminding everyone who'd forgotten that Nikola Jokic is still good. I'm going to contribute a little further to that. A guy, Stats Williams, texted me last night going into the games and said Nikola Jokic had a chance to do something nobody's ever done this late in the season, which is lead the league in points, rebounds, and assists. Total points, total rebounds, total assists. Our guy, Stats, was tracking this all night. When the games ended, he was very excited, wanted to make sure I talked about it on the pod, that Nikola Jokic is now, on December 3rd, leading the entire league in total points, total rebounds, and total assists, something that nobody had ever done at this point in the season. I think Will Chamberlain was the only guy who'd been second or better in all three by this point in the season. So there's your there's your daily pod reminder that Nikola Jokic remains very good at basketball.
Incredible. Well, the reason I like that stat is because it's in total, which is not the average, obviously, but is an illustration that how
being available.
He plays basically every game. He did skip a game like a week ago, but he basically plays every game and he plays big minutes in every game until it's salted away. And that matters.
Well, and he skipped the game a week ago and he let DeAndre Jordan go crazy and demolish the Clippers.
The Lob City DeAndre came back, baby. I think the incredible thing about that is early on in Joker's career, the big question was, hey, is this pudgy guy ever going to be in decent shape? And now he's like one of the most durable superstars in the league who just gets, you know, his arms slashed up on a nightly basis and keeps on playing heavy minutes and putting up unbelievable numbers.
He's in better condition now, obviously, but I remember when they had that 3 overtime marathon against the Blazers in the playoffs. And, you know, people were questioning, you know, and he was like, did I look like I was winded? He's like, I'm not winded. I'm fine. Like, I remember him saying that. And it was kind of like a fair point. Now, mm-hmm. he also became the 2-time MVP after he got in better condition. So I think he would agree that there's both sides of it. But listen, anyway, he's not playing.
Let's get back to Kings Pelicans.
Oh, wait, can I mention Pelicans, DeAndre was minus 17 in 10 minutes last night? Whoops, I'm sorry. Let's go on.
I remain on the record that Clippers loss was the most humiliating loss in the NBA this season.
We agree. By the way, we should say
Reggie Jackson also went crazy. Speaking of former Clippers, that was like
on the day they honored him as a returning former Clipper. We should say though, the reason the Pelicans are in this game is because they beat the Denver Nuggets. That they won that group. They upset Denver. And that's why they're playing Sacramento in this game, and why Denver, despite Jokic playing this well, is not in the quarterfinals of the tournament.
No, the
reason Denver
had
two losses.
No, hold on.
So,
hold on. Yeah. Let me say some positive stuff about the Dallas Mavericks. The reason the Pelicans are in this game is because the Mavericks defended their non-in-season tournament home court. Couldn't get their in-season tournament court down, but they defended their home turf. Beat the Houston Rockets, who had a chance to clinch this group. And they said, no, no, no. We're going to be state champs this year, baby. And sent the Pelicans to, well, not quite Vegas yet, but at least gave a chance.
Everybody has defended their home court against the Rockets, who lost to the Lakers in LA on Saturday. Did you guys see the video?
Wendy, I'm
of
trying
LeBron?
To be positive.
Sorry. Did you guys see the video of LeBron and Ime Udoka Saturday night?
Ime has no problem chirping with guys. He's chirped with guys for years.
Yeah, I think they were talking about stuffing, and I don't think it was turkey related.
Well, look, here's all I'm saying. First off, if you see the video clip, the best part about the clip is you can see what Ime's saying, and you can try to be an amateur lip reader on that. You can't see what LeBron's saying. But the people behind Ime, several fans right behind Ime, who may not have been able to hear what Ime was saying because it's a loud arena and he wasn't facing them, but certainly heard what LeBron was saying. Like their eyes, their jaws dropped, their eyes widened, they covered their mouths. Like, and then the official ejected Ime and teched LeBron. Now, I'm just going to say this. Obviously, it never would reach this point, but if there was any coach in the NBA who I would give a chance of at least wrestling with LeBron for a few seconds, it would be Ime Udoka.
There's two coaches. There's two. And Ime's definitely, I might put him second on the list, but Ime, look, he's a big, tough.
I think I know the other one.
Take a guess.
I'm going to guess it's LeBron's coach.
No. He'd be on this. Jamal Moses.
I mean, Ime is like 6'7". Now
Ime is 6'5". I actually just talked to him for a story about dunking coaches the other day. He is 6'5".
He's big. Still
he looks like he's 6'7".
Jamal Mosley is 6'8", in great shape, and the way he stays in shape is doing MMA training. I'm just telling you. You don't want to scrap with Jamal Mosley.
Okay. Hold on. Jamal Mosley is never getting into that screaming match with LeBron. He does. Not. That's not his temperament at all.
Yeah.
Jamal, Ime Udoka, great dude. Saw Jamal last night after his team got smacked by the Nets. He was still in a good mood.
But Darvin Ham is an interesting
He's up
concept,
there.
But Ime's shoulders.
Oh yeah.
He when Ime's walking up and down that sideline, it cuts an impressive. It's an impressive figure. Okay. Anyway.
Everybody in Sacramento and New Orleans are going to be so angry at us that we've now spent 15 minutes.
Well, the Pelicans were on the Pelicans were on the other side of that game against the Bulls, where they moved the ball so well and put up 125.
Yeah.
So the Pelicans are 11-10. They have a couple of impressive wins. They have beaten the Kings twice already this year. Both were at home in a baseball series before De'Aaron Fox came back from his ankle injury. Nonetheless, they are 2-0 against the Kings. That doesn't get negated to zero. The big thing for them is that Trey Murphy is back from his knee injury. He didn't play. I don't think he played on Saturday night.
Well, they were on the second night of a back-to-back. He had a really good night the night before.
Yeah, he shot the ball. So they have him having him to help stretch the court because their three-point shooting, their outside shooting is problematic, is key. So that's important. Also, we talked in the last pod about Zion. Zion had another good shooting night in Chicago. He's shooting 67% over his last six or seven games. So they have Zion playing well. They have Trey Murphy back. So, I mean, they're coming in with maybe a team that's better representative than the 11-10 that their record says. That said, they're 11-10, and they're coming into Sacramento, where I'm sure there's going to be a terrific environment.
Oh, yes.
For that game.
Yes. Look, you talk about a place where the environment is electric, like literally with the beam. And a place that is fired up about their team, their franchise becoming relevant again after being stuck in the desert for 16 years. Yeah. Hey, this is going to be, that will be a fun atmosphere in Sacramento. You can guarantee.
Yeah. I'm jealous. I won't be at that one. I'm excited to be at this Indiana game. It's going to be a great game.
Yeah, but you're going to be at two of the four. You're going up to Milwaukee on Tuesday.
I know. I'm just saying that to McMahon's point, that game in Sacramento, that is going to be an unbelievable environment because those fans are going to be jacked up and that place is going to be hopping. I think the Kings are going to win that game. Zion is a really tough matchup for the Kings. They don't really have a guy who can really take him on physically. He could just overwhelm Sacramento and beat them. De'Aaron Fox, though, has been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I do think, frankly, that it's a problem for New Orleans that CJ McCollum is back and I assume will be starting in this game. I like the lineup with Dyson Daniels at point guard better. They're much bigger. They're much more physical. I don't like CJ being out there with De'Aaron Fox being able to go at him time and again. I think
ESPN
with the home
on ESPN
court,
crime, man, bombs at the bench, our colleague, Wendy.
Well, if you look at their team, I think him coming off the bench makes more sense.
It's going to be an awkward NBA summit next year when he shows up. Oh, wait, those are on Zoom now.
Also, they've been better when Zion has played more at point, which they certainly started doing when CJ was out. So it's a bit of a challenge to sort of to do all that. But CJ can't put the ball in the basket, which is something Dyson Daniels doesn't always do. And in this game, they may need points. So
they're going to need points. It's just, I don't know. I also don't know if you want to get in a track meet with Sacramento.
The Kings were the Pacers last year, right? They were the best offense in NBA history who couldn't stop anybody and managed to make it to the third seed in the West doing it. They're a little bit better defensively this year, but they still want to put the track spikes on.
Yeah. And De'Aaron Fox has been just unbelievable. I mean, up to 30 points, shooting 49, a little under 48.9% from the field. I mean, he just continues to get better. He's been great. But yeah, I pick Sacramento to win that one. I like their home court. I like De'Aaron Fox. That's going to be a fun game, though.
Okay, in the Tuesday semifinals, Knicks at Bucks, the first game. You're going to head up, I guess, I-94, but what do you take to get, what's the highway from Indianapolis to Chicago? I can't remember.
Ontimes takes a private jet, dude.
I definitely do not. It is 65, I believe.
All right, what are we going to do?
It is 65. I know, by the way, McMahon.
This segment sponsored by MapQuest.
I know of multiple, MapQuest. I think their check would bounce. I know of multiple instances in the last few years of Bontemps being on a private jet. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh,
I have been on a private jet.
Well,
he has been on a private jet.
You know what, though? He drinks multiple Bud Light on the private jet. So that takes away. Well, I better not say that. to. Anyways, domestic beer. Let's go on.
Oh my God. Well, I guess we know what he had when you guys went out to dinner. I guess we know what he had when you guys went out for drinks last week.
Yeah, but in New York, they still cost like 18 bucks a pop. My God.
I guess we know who paid. McMahon had life sticker shock.
We know what he drank. We know who paid.
In New York, yes. That's true.
Yeah, to take out a loan.
All right. Anyway, I will say this. The Knicks have been putting together some decent performances. You've been in a number of their recent games, Bontemps. I wouldn't say that, you know, you look at them and are like, wow, this is a formidable team. But they do play hard almost every night. Mm-hmm. And Jalen Brunson has been, I don't have the data in front of me to say this is the best stretch he's had, but it feels like it's the most impressive stretch he's had. And they're going to need something special from him, you know, heading up against Dame Lillard. So that's definitely a matchup potential of being really fun to watch.
Well, these teams played in the in-season tournament, first night of the games back at the beginning of November. And all Jalen Brunson had was 45 points in Milwaukee, getting whatever he wanted throughout the game, in a game that the Bucks narrowly escaped with a win. I think the Knicks are going to win this game. The Bucks have not been playing well. Yes, they came back and beat Atlanta Saturday night. But as we've talked about a bunch, they've been scraping by and winning a lot of games close and ugly. I don't think they're going to be able to do that against the Knicks, who are playing pretty well, have a deep physical team. Jalen Brunson has already proven he can score a bunch on the Bucks. And if their other guys hit shots, it's always the key with the Knicks. If their supporting players hit shots, they're really, really tough to beat. When RJ Barrett and especially Julius Randle and Quentin Grimes and those guys are getting shots, and then you've got Brunson and Quickly at the head of the snake getting in the paint and scoring, they could be pretty tough to beat. Certainly Celtics Bucks would be a lot of fun if we got that for a second time already this season on Thursday in the semifinals, but Celtics Knicks wouldn't be bad either, and I think that's what we're going to get.
Yeah, big, hey, but you got big game Brunson, baby. You know, guy who he likes playing. He's got some history of success in these, one and dones. Couple of national championships at Villanova.
It's true.
You know, the second of which he was the guy on.
They're fired up about the tournament too. They were very excited when that last Tuesday they were part of all those fireworks across the league trying to get in, and they were pumped in the locker room afterward. I think they're motivated to get a win. So it'll be that'll be a fun game, though. I'm excited to see it. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about Tibbs is he does successfully get the team ready to play. And he'll have a couple of days, you know, they don't play Sunday, Monday.
Practices. They will be prepared.
Yes.
They will be prepared.
I'm not saying there's any sort of game plan or whatever, but like the fact that, you know, in the NBA, you very rarely get to truly prepare for your opponent.
Yeah.
In this case, the fact that there is an extra day.
Well, Tibbs had a week to prepare. They found out last Tuesday they were playing Milwaukee.
True, but I mean to actually run them through the paces.
No, I know.
I think that's relevant.
And they have the whole weekend off. Didn't play since Friday. Had a nice win in Toronto to wrap up a back-to-back set of victories.
Right, that'll but they wouldn't have practiced game on Saturday. So they had Sunday, Sunday, and then they have Monday.
Tibbs probably got it. Tibbs is chilling. He's got his feet kicked up, watching some NFL day. He's just probably having a few domestic beers himself. He's not an intense dude. He's probably not taking this too seriously.
Right,
not at all.
And then in the late game, the last in-season tournament's quarterfinal is going to be at crypto.com. The Suns traveling to play the Lakers. These two teams have played twice already. They were both very good games. They've split. Devin Booker's back from his most recent injury that knocked him out. He had a big performance against the Grizzlies on Saturday night. I think he had 34, 10, and 7. Kevin Durant continues having a terrific scoring season. He put up 27 in that game. When these two guys play, they are formidable. They just haven't been able to get on the court that much together. When Booker has been out there, I think they're 9-2. Does that sound right?
Something like that. Sounds about right. Yeah.
I'll pull it up while you're talking.
So I assume Booker's going to be right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Booker's going to be ready in this game. It's on the road. You know, the Lakers have been a little up and down. The good thing for the Lakers is it looks like Rui Hachimura is going to be available to play coming off that nasal fracture. I think he had to have minor surgery on that, but he's been out a week. He was actually active but didn't play for the Lakers against the Rockets on Saturday night. So they get Hachimura back for that game.
Suns get Booker back. Lakers get Hachimura back. Yeah. Very, very much the same.
Potato, potato.
Well, you know, the Lakers have, you know, struggled with injury availability throughout the season. They did have, you know, Austin Reeves, a really good game against the Rockets. Austin Reeves is a really big sort of variable for the Lakers this year. He hasn't been the consistent player that he was last year, especially at the end of the season. They moved him to the bench. He's continue to sort of be up and down in that role. The Lakers would think that they have a depth advantage in this game. I mean, it will be important what happens with Austin Reeves on the court with the second unit. I feel like that's going to be key parts of the game.
We can get into the weeds and, you know, the Hachimuras and how's Austin Reeves. Listen, you have two of the top 10 scorers in NBA history.
Yeah, Durant just moved into the top 10.
Just moved in.
Not that we didn't already know that.
Right.
That's right.
I meant to hit Stats Williams on this, and it's my fault for not doing it, but I wonder how, like, when's the last time you had two top 10 scorers, like active top 10 scorers match up? And dude, the crazy
thing would have been Dirk and LeBron.
This is the first time in season tournament history two top 10 scorers are playing each other.
It would have been Dirk and LeBron, right?
Okay, and so then my other point about it is this. Maybe never have you had two top 10 in all-time scorers match up that are still playing at this level.
Well, that would have been Malone and Jordan, I think, would have still
maybe
been in that.
Yeah.
In that. But since then, that's the last time, like, probably since then.
LeBron somehow, some way, at the age of 97 years old, is still one of the most dominant players in the league. Like, he's still an all-NBA player. If he hits the games total, like, there's no debate.
He's
KD.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Like, the only question is, will they play the 65 games? So both of these guys, like, they have not fallen off as KD's in his mid-30s and LeBron's in his late 30s. The only thing that's fallen off is the durability. But when they're on the floor, holy smokes. And just to get that, you know, they played against each other for the first time in 5 years in the opener, just because of the circumstances, unfortunate injury time, and et cetera. So that's exciting. And then, like, when the secondary stars are at the level of an Anthony Davis and a Devin Booker.
I mean, whoa, this calling Anthony Davis a secondary star.
Well, what? He's not the second star on that team.
I think the real question is, who is the best player in the game? My answer would be Devin Booker.
I was going to say it might be Devin Booker.
As much as I have a case for how great Jokic has been this year and want to point out to that, Devin Booker is putting together a very impressive resume for someone who's played, you know, 11 games. But his playmaking, in addition to his scoring, has been just terrific. He has been absolutely awesome so far this year.
He is tied for fifth in the league in assists with his good friend and Christmas guest, Luka Doncic.
I'm sure there's going to be warm feelings all around in that game.
Listen, when you're around the Mavericks, there's a whole lot of warm and fuzzy kumbaya.
Do you think that Devin will send Luka like a blanket or a rattle or something to celebrate the birth of his first child?
There were people that were saying that this child is the Gabriella, Luka's newborn daughter, is a sibling of Devin Booker, but I don't think that's accurate. I think that is maybe internet meme material.
Christmas night. Or is it Christmas afternoon? I can't remember what time of the game.
Christmas night. I believe it's Christmas night. Okay. Like I said, you know, it's going to be the holidays.
But first, Devin Booker will deal with LeBron and Anthony Davis and the other secondary stars in that game. So, you know, in all honesty, whoever wins this game goes to Vegas. Will, you know, if the Lakers were the best in-season tournament game, you know, you're going to see a team that it will have earned their way there. Mm-hmm. And probably will be favored over either the Kings or Pelicans. Maybe not fairly. We obviously could have a powerhouse Eastern Conference semifinal, but this game is a lot of stakes in this one for sure.
Yeah, I think the Suns are winning that game. The first two games these teams played, Devin Booker didn't play. Beal played in the second one. Suns controlled most of the game, and then the Lakers had a wild comeback in the fourth quarter to win in Phoenix. I just think with Booker and Durant, the Suns are just better. And I don't.
Okay, so you declared you think the Knicks are beating the Bucks.
Ooh.
And I will say this about the Bucks: the Bucks have had some sorcery to get some of their wins this year. Now that sorcerer has been, you know, Dame Dala, Mr. Clutch. It hasn't been
Randy Cajones Factor Player of the Month, although he, right after that pot, he had a they managed to lose to the Bulls in overtime, but neither here nor there.
Yes, but it was in December. It was not in November.
I think it was the last night in November. But anyway,
was it? Okay. Well, anyway, the Bucks are 14-6, but I'm not sure that's a record that is representative of the way they've played. But
it's definitely not. I mean, they've had a pretty soft schedule, and they've had a lot of close wins. Now, they get credit for Dame playing great in the clutch and winning those games, and that's part of what the theory of the case for trading for him was. But it has only underscored the defensive issues, the depth issues, and some of the fit issues that they have. That's all.
Well, anyway, Giannis did have his first triple-double of the season on Saturday night, so he's coming in feeling good. So anyway, you've declared you like the Knicks and you like the Suns. Do you want to go Bontemps any further on the
Pelicans, had to fill out a bracket. Did you guys get asked to fill out a bracket?
Wendy probably got asked.
I don't make predictions.
You know, no. Wendy doesn't make predictions. No, sorry, Bob.
He makes predictions and then says he doesn't make them. It's a good business.
He makes European trips more often than he makes predictions.
Technically, where I'm at is not part of Europe.
For my bracket, I had Celtics, Kings, Knicks, and Suns. I had Celtics and Kings winning, and I had the Celtics winning the tournament. Oh. Kings beating the Suns in the semifinal.
I believe I had Bucks over Knicks. I had Celtics over Suns in the final.
Okay.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. All right. So we are a quarter of the way or so into the season, and attempt for straw poll has not yet been deployed, but we thought we would take a look at some of the other awards that where our quarter of the way into the season. And let's start with an interesting one, Rookie of the Year. Fair to say it's a two-man race.
Yeah, we talked about this. I think it's pretty clear cut. I think it's the guy that I saw last night, Chet Holmgren. And it wasn't a great Chet performance for most of it, but boy, at the end, did he come through with some swats. He ends up with like 11 points, 11 rebounds, 5 blocks. But Chet has played better than Wimby, and obviously a much better situation, a situation where he has a chance to win, but he's contributing to winning. Quick side note, Derek Lively II had 20 points, 16 rebounds, 7 blocks in that game. He had a 16-10 double-double against Wemby. Listen, this kid's got a bright, bright future. He's been an impact player now, and he does love playing against those rookie of the year frontrunners, it seems.
Look, this has been it's been a really deep rookie class. I mean, Lively's playing well. Detroit, they're basically the only upside thing for Detroit all season.
They just took Asar Thompson out of the starting lineup.
Well, totally makes sense.
But that'll
help you win for the first time since 2011.
He's been a fun story. Jaime Jaquez has been fantastic for Miami. Has really carved out a huge role for them this season. You know, when Jimmy Butler's out, he's basically running the team for them at the moment with Tyler Hero banged up. You go through this class, there's been a ton of guys who've had a big impact. But yeah, I don't think this is up for much of a debate. Chet's flirting with a 50-40-90 season, averaging 17 a game and 2 blocks a game and 8 rebounds a game for a Thunder team that's in the playoff mix. And the only reason we're not talking about how abject of a disaster the Spurs are is because the Pistons are even worse. So, you know, and that's no, I think obviously Victor's got a chance to be an incredible player, but they're 2-3 and whatever. Like, you know, one guy's contributing to a playoff team.
Nobody can succinctly describe a disaster like the USWB, Tim Bontemps, baby.
Well, look, Wembanyama is almost averaging 20-10 and 3 blocks.
Yeah, he's been great.
So,
he's having a rookie of the year caliber season, but Chet's been better.
Yes. Yes. I don't know if Chet's been better than Victor, but it's very hard to, they don't play the same role. And it's very hard to give somebody an award who's been on a team that's lost 14 games in a row or whatever it's at.
Yeah. So Chet has the luxury of fitting in with Victor, loaded starting lineup, and Victor's on a rebuilding team.
It's not a knock on Victor at all. He's great.
I'm just saying 20-10 and 3 blocks is essentially what he's averaging. He's not quite at those numbers. If you round up, that's where he's at. So
sure. The other guy's averaging 17-8 and 2 blocks and is at like 50-39-87. Listen, so, they've both been great.
I would, if I had to vote today, I would vote for Chet, but I have seen some people like saying that Victor ain't it. And I'm really?
Victor's still in. He's a guy.
What are we doing here, Brian? Yeah. No one is saying that. There's plenty of people saying it. Many people are saying.
Many people are saying.
Wait, come on.
I will say this.
That's a ridiculous straw man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a ridiculous straw man you are creating to try to like.
I'm not creating.
Playing great.
I'm not creating.
Name names. Call them out.
I have seen some people say some things about Victor, like, you know,
people with IQs higher than his jersey number.
I'll just leave it at that. Okay. Coach of the year at this point. Bad loss on Saturday. They got blown out, but it's very hard to look at everything and not credit Jamal Mosley and what he's been doing with the Orlando Magic.
Mm-hmm. They were on the second night of a back-to-back. They'd won. I mean, they were perfectly fine after the game. Ironically, ironically, they've gotten routed twice by the Nets before that streak started and ending it, which is kind of interesting. Because everybody else, they're 14-4, including some really impressive wins. They've had a great start. It's going to be a big month for them. They play the Cavs a couple times. They play the Bucks. They play the Celtics. I think by the end of the month, we're going to have a really play the Sixers and Knicks. You know, by the end of December, we're going to have a really good feel, I think, for how legitimate this Orlando team is. I would give Jamal the Coach of the Year award right now because he has done an incredible job.
There's one other name that I would debate with it. Let's see
Ime having the Rockets in the play-in mix certainly is impressive. I think you could put him in the conversation, but I think the top three right now in some order is Jamal Mosley, Chris Finch with the Wolves, who has them first.
That's the guy.
The West,
that's the guy that I would seriously.
And Mark Daigneault, who has the Thunder in second. Like if those they finish first and second in the West, and the Magic are in the top 4 or 6 in the East, it's going to be hard for me to argue anybody else will be on the ballot.
Yeah, and
about Finch is Finch has a certain philosophy about how he wants to play, and that philosophy is paying dividends. And you know, it didn't work really last year, but that philosophy is paying dividends and they're defending and they're piling up wins and they've been impressive. So you gotta give them credit for that.
And when the Gobert trade was made and you're talking about how's this thing going to fit offensively, they're still not a great offensive team, but they're significantly improved. And, you know, a lot of those concerns are being figured out. But a lot of the talk was, hey, Chris Finch is one of the most creative coaches in the league. He's one of the best X's and O's guys in the league. If someone's going to figure it out, you like his odds. And they figured it out to the tune of 15-4. You know, Ime Udoka, like the improvement the Rockets have made on the defensive end, you know, obviously personnel has helped.
Dylan Brooks, sixth in the league in defense.
Right, Dylan Brooks, Fred VanVleet. But, you know, to have Alpi Shingun as part of a top six defense, like you've got to give Ime Udoka a ton of credit. Probably to be a Coach of the Year candidate, they're going to have to win at least one road game this season. And that is yet to happen.
It's true.
By the way, there's one team. There's one team in the NBA in the top five in offense and defense. Who is it?
One team in the NBA. Is it
Boston?
Nope.
Oklahoma City?
Oklahoma City. Fifth in both.
And listen, Dagenaul, the old LinkedIn coach, I've been told by a high-ranking Thunder executive, not to say the LinkedIn coach, but that's what this man was. When he was hired, I Googled his name, and the first thing that popped up was his LinkedIn profile. That's how anonymous he was. All he has done is patiently and step by step been a massive part of this thing being built. Boom, boom, boom. Developing these guys. A huge part of coaching is development. The Thunder develop players. And then just figuring out the pieces. And, you know, Dagenaul, the fascinating thing about him is everybody on the team plays. And obviously, you know, they've got their starters, and then Isaiah Joe's kind of the sixth man. And by the way, has he been a find?
They got him for free. You know, they got him for free.
Kayson Wallace, who if we're gonna talk about guys who are having really, really good rookie seasons.
Another rookie's been great.
Richardson, Texas's Kayson Wallace needs to be mentioned in that conversation as well. But like the rotation, the bench guys, it can be totally different game to game, week to week. He's just got such a good feel for how to keep everybody involved. You know, when might be a good time? When's a Kenrich Williams game? When's a Jalen Williams game? You know, on Davis Bertans, the biggest story coming out of last night's game at the American Airlines Center was the Davis Bertans revenge game, baby. The man had 15 points on 3 field goal attempts. Are you kidding me? But yeah, Dagenaul's done a phenomenal job there in Oklahoma City. And look, man, it's too early to say the Thunder are contenders, but they might be as soon as this spring, brother.
Listen,
they might already be contenders.
I'm going to say they're contenders right now. They're fifth in the league in offense. They're fifth in the league in defense. And they're second only to the Celtics in net rating, 8.4 points per 100 possessions better. I think you have to say they're a contending team. West, if you want to say Denver's first, I believe Denver's first. After that, I think you make a case for a whole bunch of teams to be second, and they're one of them.
You know, we'll say this about the Thunder. If you're top five in both, you're a contender. It's almost like you can't not be. You have to do it more than in December. I will say this. You know, it was an interesting trade. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was talking about possible trades that the Thunder could make. And I said, well, they've got the Victor Oladipo contract. And I was told, no, they traded that for Kevin Porter. I forgot about that transaction. Forgot about it. And
but look,
I know they have Bertans. Sorry. But I'm just saying, like, Sam Presti gave this speech before the start of the season about improving this roster. And I really liked it. And he came up with this phrase where he's like, we have to finish our breakfast, which was very succinct and well said. I really like it. It's going to take discipline to do that. And Sam Presti's one of the league leaders in discipline. So I don't have a doubt, but
I think they're eating lunch right now, brother. I think they got a big old slab of barbecue ribs on that plate now. Oklahoma barbecue ain't that good, but the Thunder are.
This season was about figuring out how their pieces fit together. The biggest part of that, like we've talked about a bunch, was whether Chet Holmgren could be a center. Not only has he been a center since day one, he's been awesome. And like that's totally changed the trajectory for their team by having him be able to play five all the time.
It's also about, do they need to go get another star? And the answer might be no. We've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is a superstar. Chet Holmgren looks like he's a star. Jalen Williams, J-Dub, as they say. If he's your third player, he's a pretty damn good
one area player. Where they do not excel is rebounding.
Yeah, they're small.
They are
small.
Yeah. And so as you look at them going forward and you think about playoff series, they can't afford to potentially get worked on the boards like they have at times this season. I'm not saying that's something they have to address before February, but it's something they're going to have to address.
Oh, yeah, that's the wing size and just I think some shooting overall are the two things I think you look at for them. Like they're just a little slight and they don't have a ton of guys that you feel super confident about shooting the ball late in games from perimeter.
Like those, that's not something that J-Dub does. J-Dub does many, many.
It's not something
well.
Shea really does either. Like he's doing it more, not but it's not like he's, yeah. It's not like he's a bomber. You know,
that's why Isaiah Joe is so
Isaiah
important.
Joe's been
team.
Huge right. for them. Yep.
Okay.
And Chet. And Chet is a shooter. That's
yes,
true.
Absolutely.
He addressed their rim protection needs, which were glaring, and their 3-point shooting needs.
No question.
You mentioned Alpi Shea. A little bit ago, he would definitely be a serious contender at this point for most improved. Most improved is going to be it's always a scatter category. But Şengün would be a strong candidate for most improved. I know
Tyrese
some people
Maxey'd be in the mix too.
Tyrese Maxey for sure. I know some people have this thing about not voting for second year players for most improved. Şengün's a third year player, so he would qualify on anything. But Tyrese Maxey obviously has a very compelling case. Not sure if you guys have anybody else you like up there.
Off the top of my head, those are the two I think that stand out. I'm sure there's others. That's always an award where there's a lot of candidates like Coach of the Year.
Yeah. I've not put a ton of thought into most improved player at this point.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just did a drive by. All right. And then the last one I want to talk about before we move on is Defensive Player of the Year. Rudy Gobert is putting together a
Rudy's
strong
back.
Case.
Rudy's back. Yeah. Last year, he did not look like physically he was going to get back to being the level he was before. Frankly, this summer at the World Cup, when France was disappointing, he didn't look like he was going to get back to the player he was before. But he is flying around on defense in like he was in his prime Utah days. And the fact that this team, with Karl-Anthony Towns playing at the four, with obviously they've got Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels, but that they're leading the league in defense, that's because Rudy Gobert is back to being the best defensive player in the league and is dominating inside. And that was the vision for the trade when they made it, was that Rudy Gobert is good enough on defense where they could be a supersized version of that Utah team where you've got Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards bombing away on offense, and you've got Rudy Gobert at the rim making plays. And that's why they're first in the league in defense. That's why they're first in the West. I don't even think there's a close second right now for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, and look, it would be a historical thing if he wins it. It would be his fourth. And trust me, that man is motivated.
He knows, that's right.
That man is motivated. And yeah, you know, he's came into the season with a chip on his shoulder. He wants to remind people that he's the best defensive player in the world. That's his mind frame.
And he's doing it.
And it's one of those things like when Gobert is at his best defensively, it's not about like shots blocked. It's not even about shots contested. A lot of times it's about shots that are reconsidered and
that
not
is
attempted.
Absolutely correct. He's got to lead the league in shot. I know. I don't know. There could be a snappier term than reconsidered shots, but you see it all the time. And sometimes he's not even that close to the play. You see the guy. I mean, it's almost, I remember one time, I have this really good memory of one time watching Tony Allen defend Kevin Durant. And there in this one play, I mean, Durant was in his absolute prime, scoring champ, all this stuff. And Allen got hung up on a screen. And it was the fourth quarter of the game. Allen got hung up on the screen, was nowhere to be found. Durant caught the ball at the foul line and immediately turned and covered up because he was so... And this is Durant isn't bothered by anybody. Let's be honest. And it's because Tony Allen was so in his head and so aggressive and so strong and always there that he was defending him when he wasn't even there. And that's how Gobert plays when he's absolutely at his best. He can defend you when he's not even standing there. And that happens all of the time.
Yeah,
when you
you're
watch,
looking for
I mean,
him. You're worried about him.
Yes.
Yeah, he changes the geometry of the offense when he is playing at his best. And our guy, Worldwide Wob, has been cutting up these clips from games lately, just showing him flying around for 2-minute stretches at a time, just wreaking havoc on the opposition. And it's been fun to see because, like, the peak Rudy at 7'3", like, he's always sort of gotten a raw deal, I think, with how athletic he is at his size. because people just see him as a huge guy and think he's just sitting at the rim. And when he's moving around the court like this, it just totally short circuits what these teams are doing. And it's fun to see him playing like that again. I frankly didn't think we were going to see that guy again. I mean, you know him even better than I do, McMahon, or certainly a lot better than I do. I didn't know what your thought was on it, but after the way the last 12 months went, or 15 months, including the World Cup, I was thinking he was going to come in and look like this.
Yeah, certainly concern. And I've talked with Rudy a little bit over these last, during this season, and man, he's comfortable. He's excited. You know, everything's finished. He's never played with defenders as good as Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels. Both those guys are banged up right now, but he has, and all due respect to Royce O'Neal, he is not anywhere near the level of those guys as, wing and on-ball defenders. Getting Mike Conley for the Wolves was just huge. You can't look at
Conley. You go back to last year's
box score numbers.
No, you go back to last year's trade deadline when they got Conley, and you look at them from then forward. It's just such a radically different team than when they had D'Angelo Russell the first half of last year.
And look, you guys are very friendly. At least Wendy is. Bontemps, you're a jackass. But, I've taken my fair little jabs at Spiggs, but Moat, the greatest, self-proclaimed greatest shooting big man of all time, Karl Anthony Towns. But you've got to give him credit, too. Is he the weak link on their defense? Sure. But it's a cliche for a reason. You're only as strong as your weak link. He's playing hard. He's participating. He's doing what he needs to do within that system. And I think you also have to give him credit for kind of, not pouting and being a diva about, hey, it's Ant's team now. You're the number two guy. Karl Anthony Towns is really playing good basketball as well.
Yeah, he's averaging 22-9 on 50-40-90, which I just looked up. Remember when he wasn't hitting shots the first few weeks of the season? Yeah. That is ended.
Yeah, he's back.
Yeah, Cat's really playing well, and he's been a big, big, big part of the Timberwolves being the number one team in the Western Conference to this point. Other Defense Player of the Year candidates, let's at least mention some guys. Somehow, the Celtics traded a Defense Player of the Year guard and got a better one, Drew Holiday. Is absolutely got to be on
Drew Holiday in that end of that 76ers game made a couple of just subtle defensive brilliant plays.
He's been fantastic. I actually think the guy in the Celtics who has been the best defensive player for them has been Chris Porzingis, who has been in their system. They have him at the rim, and you talk about guys reconsidering shots. I mean, there are a lot of guys who get in the lane and like, oh man, what do we do? With Porzingis standing there at the rim. He has been great.
That's wild because Carlisle's last year in Dallas, Porzingis was one of the worst defensive players.
I know.
I mean, he was coming off the meniscus and he was miserable. Absolutely miserable. Couldn't move and wasn't motivated to move if he could.
Yeah.
But no, he's been great too. And then we talked about Chet as rookie of the year. Thunder is a top five defense with him patrolling things in the middle and swatting stuff and all kinds of things. He's got to be a guy who would be on ballots if you're doing this point of the season DPOY voting.
All right, Mitchell Robinson has been awesome.
Oh yeah, Mitchell Robinson has been terrific. And if there was an offensive rebounder of the year, Mitchell Robinson. They needed to invent another.
He
new
might be
trophy.
The best offensive rebounder since Moses Malone.
He is absolutely a killer in the offensive glass. Okay, a couple of notes real quick. First off, we have an odd week here with the pod because we typically record on Tuesdays, and there's games late Tuesday night. And we're not going to be able to do that Tuesday night. I don't really even have it figured out yet. Plus, we're recording our live show on Friday night in Vegas. So the pod schedule may be a little bit off, and just shrug my cards. I don't know what it's going to be yet. So just bear with us a little bit. We will have a podcast that goes up on Saturday off the live show on Friday, but we're going to be a little bit off. And of course, that live show, there's a whole bunch of people who are going to find out in the next 48 hours that their team is going to Vegas this weekend. Still tickets available for our Hoop Collective live show. McMahon will be there. Temps will be there. Some special guests. We'll have more special guests. We're not going to announce anything yet.
Wendy trading cards will be there. Those Topps cards, he's bringing them, baby.
I have the cards have come with me to the UK, and they will baggage handling willing, make the trip. I have some. I don't know if I have enough for everybody, but I have some.
And, for a variety of reasons, we're not sharing any guests yet, but we do have some pretty cool guests confirmed so far. So excited for, very excited for Friday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay. And you can check that out at Bitly. The IT department will be there. You can, if Bontemps picked against your team tonight, you can bring in a tomato and throw it at him. Just
kidding. I
don't know
if we should be encouraging that. People probably will.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wait till you see him on the street. Okay. Right. Bitly.
I recommend batteries.
Bitly/WindyHoopVegas for ticket information. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to Dan Stanzik for filling in for Jackson tonight. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you at some point later this week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.